You're listening to Adventures in Autism. Each episode, we will bring you the latest in news regarding autism, as well as our personal story and the topic of the week. We are not medical professionals, and none of the information that we give should be taken as such. Instead, we are parents of a severely autistic child. We are here to share our lives and our personal experiences with you. If you would like to know more about our personal story or access any of our other podcasts, you may do so through openeyesnetwork.com. If you would like to share your personal story with us, you may send an email to feedback@openeyesnetwork.com or access our Facebook fan page at Open Eyes Network, as well as our Twitter feed at Open Eyes Network. Thanks for listening. Well, hello there, and welcome to another Adventure in Autism. My name is Ira Robinson.
And this is Jolene Robinson.
And we would like to welcome you guys to what we hope will be another informative episode for you guys. We've been very busy trying to get everything ready to bring to you guys this week. We think that we have a big one for you. We wanted to talk to you guys about comfort items, comfort foods, and dealing with aggression. And some of the things that go into those topics. And there's a lot to it, isn't there?
Oh, yeah, quite a bit.
So we actually found a bit of news that we wanted to bring on this episode. We haven't done that of late, but I ran across a story regarding autism specifically that I wanted to bring to the show and maybe get your thoughts on, hun, just because this is a really weird one.
Mm-hmm.
So this one took place in the UK, but it can happen here as well. A head teacher endured a six-month disability hate crime investigation by police and council bureaucrats because she said that an autistic pupil had special needs. Janet Falcon, age 60, was stunned to discover that she had been reported to police after using the innocuous phrase during a governor's meeting. The school leader, who was described as outstanding by colleagues, was discussing a child with autism when she referred to the pupil's special needs, a standard term used regularly within education. But after minutes of the meeting were posted online, the pupil's father complained to the authorities, claiming that his child would be offended by the phrase. The father, a parent governor at Blatchington Mill, a secondary school in Hove, East Sussex, said the child was highly intelligent and the use of special needs constituted a hate crime. After fighting the accusations for 6 months, Ms. Falcon has finally been cleared of any wrongdoing. She said, "It is a matter of great regret to me that I have had to spend a great deal of time and energy in dealing with the ongoing vexatious accusations from a particular individual." So let me get your thoughts on this here, first of all.
Okay, so first off, we go from saying a child has retardation is a politically incorrect term. And so nowadays we say the child has special needs. So to turn around and say that is incorrect, I don't really understand what they're getting at with that. Oh, that's offensive. Okay, so he understands he's a highly functioning kid, and so can understand the terms of what she means. So then that means he understands what he has, and he should be able to know, if this is the case, that that's kind of what he's termed as.
Right, and that he does not have a normal functioning brain. Otherwise, he wouldn't have the diagnosis.
Yeah, I mean, if a kid was paralyzed, you'd still consider that child special needs because, well, they need special needs to be able to get around the school or something like that.
Right.
So, I mean, he shouldn't, you know, this is kind of a silly situation. Like I said, you know, just something as simple as that, just being paralyzed or even having a broken leg for a while. you're considered a special need for a little bit.
Right, because you have to be treated in a special way in order to function as the rest of the classes do.
Yeah, exactly. And to consider that a hate crime is really...
Yeah, I think I can understand maybe being a little offended at the term, but to actually consider it to be a hate crime? No, come on. That's a little excessive verbiage from this guy.
Does that mean then that at this point now we're supposed to refer to every child as to what their issue is, you know? Oh, well, we have to do this because, you know, Johnny is paralyzed, or we have to do this because Sarah is... autistic, you know. I mean, some parents don't tell these kids what they have, you know, like, you know, the disabled ones, you know, they realize something's different, but they don't know. So then, you know, what next? Parents are going to get upset because, oh, the teachers say they're autistic in front of them and they freak out and they're like, I'm not autistic, when really they are, because their parents just didn't tell them.
Right, exactly. It's like somebody not telling a kid that they're adopted and, you know, then wonder why the kid gets mad about it later when they find out. It's a really strange story. It really is. I don't understand where the parent had this as their basis of an accusation. But apparently, from what I was reading in the story, this parent had other issues with this teacher previously.
So this was kind of the topping of the cake.
Exactly. So
just trying to find whatever he can to get this teacher in trouble.
Yeah, it does broach the question, though. You know, should we consider the term special needs a hate crime, or do we even need to have a different term for kids that have issues going on?
Well, as I said before, we went from the term retardation to special needs, and I don't know what else we could go from there. I mean, after that point, it's pretty much... just call the kid by what they have, you know?
Yeah. And my personal thought is we have way
too
much. Or
just say disabled kids, you know, just skip it all and just say disabled.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm disabled. You know, I have no issue with labeling myself as being disabled. It's not a big deal to me. So, you know, I don't see why people take offense at different terms, especially when they're really innocuous like that one, you know? That one in particular is just, no, I don't see a problem with it, and I definitely would not consider it to be a hate crime to speak that kind of a term.
Exactly, yeah, especially too, because maybe it's just me, but saying the word special needs kind of sounds like a superpower kind of thing more than anything, you know, special needs, oh yeah.
Oh yeah, exactly.
That's what's always come to my mind, at least.
Yeah, well, and I mean, you could look at yourself, like I said, you know, me, I'm classed as disabled because of my vision, and you... with your upbringing, because of the heart issues that you've had your entire life, you could be considered to be special needs as well when you were younger.
Oh, yeah. I was...
In fact, you were when you were in high school because you had to do things differently. You had to take the elevator instead of the stairs and all of that kind of stuff.
Well, that was because I had my knee surgery, though.
Well, that's true, too. Yeah.
But I was going to say, yeah, no, I mean, in my elementary and middle school years, I was exempt from gym because of my heart. So, I mean, in a way, I was, you know, special needs at that point.
Right. But I guess the question would be, would you have an issue labeling yourself as being special needs in that case?
No, not really. I mean, I realize I have a heart issue. I'm not about to be offended by someone labeling it as whatever, you know?
Yep. It's kind of my idea, too. So that was the one bit of news that I ran across that I wanted to bring to the listeners. I wanted to go ahead and get into some of the ideas that we had as far as the dealing with comfort foods, comfort items, and that sort of thing.
As well as aggression.
As well as aggression, yeah. But I mean, it kind of all ties together.
Oh yeah,
really.
It all does, yeah.
At least in my mind, it does. So let's get into some things as far as comfort items goes. We'll cover items here first. Mm-hmm. So I guess the first question would be, why do kids that have autism, why is it that they, I guess, feel the need for having comfort items? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, they are, they're more sensitive to the different senses, you know, tactile senses, you know, smelling, tasting, and so on and so forth. So, you know, some of the senses, you know, different aspects of them, whether it's bitter or scratchy or screechy, you know, will be will be almost like painful to them. And then the others will be more comfortable. And, you know, it's different for each person. And that's the way with it is with just ordinary people. But for them, it's heightened.
Yeah, I mean, their senses are so much more heightened because they don't have any filters that are in place, basically, to help them to tolerate all of the different things. I mean, because, you know, if you think about it this way, with us, you know, as human beings, as we just kind of go through every day doing what we do, we're constantly input by data. We're constantly hearing sounds. We're constantly seeing sights. A great example would be that everybody, unless you have some kind of weird injury or you've had some kind of weird surgery done in your life, our nose is always visible in our vision, but our brain erases it out because it's not considered to be important data, basically, to pay attention to. And it's the same with sounds, with all the sounds that go on, you know, just sitting here in this room where we are, we can hear the computers whirring, you know, the fans on them. We can hear the light hum of the electricity going through the lamps that are here in the room. We can hear the cat purring a little bit here and there. You know, all of these different sounds are constantly coming into our ears on a constant basis, but our brains, they reject the data that's not like essential for survival basically at that moment. And so it helps us to tolerate things. And I think that in a lot of cases with autistic people, those filters are not there as readily as they are in somebody that has a normally functioning brain. And so their senses, well, again, they're that much more sensitive to the senses that are coming in, you know, all the sounds, all the sights, all the all the feelings, you know, the sense of touch, the taste in your mouth and all that stuff. It's all open to them at all times, basically, and it doesn't shut down or shut off and we, you know, can't get away from it in any way, basically.
Exactly. And if you watch them, you know, if they have a bad reaction to one of these things, whether it be touch or sound or smell or whatever, they do act as if it actually physically hurts them. And, I mean, who are we to say that it doesn't in any way, shape, or form? That it doesn't, maybe not necessarily physically, but doesn't hurt them in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think that it does. We've seen with Seth that we'll... if he hears a loud sound, you know, like a loud, sudden sound, it'll almost immediately put him into a meltdown. And there's just no avoiding it.
No, there is one avoidance of it. If it's like, for example, a vacuum cleaner and he wants his room cleaned, then he's okay. But if you run that vacuum cleaner in his room and he's not wanting it, yeah, meltdown.
Or when he's not even, I guess it's like when he's not prepared for it.
Yeah.
You know, because if he's wanting the place cleaned or something like that,
then he's tolerable.
Kind of mentally
like,
preparing yeah. for it. So
at that point, he's frustrated with what he sees. So he's like, okay, yes, run it, please.
Right, exactly. And then there's the times that like Crystal will, you know, touch his belly to tickle him or something like that. And he'll just freak out about it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, act like it's one day painful.
One day he'll be fine. And the next day he's like, Crystal, stop.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. He totally flips out over it. So, you know, it's hard to tell from moment to moment what is going to be impacting them, you know, in whatever way they have. I've seen like going to grocery stores and that type of thing where as you're walking through the grocery store, there will be, you know, all these noises, all of the lights, all of the people that are surrounding it. You know, the more the crowded it is, the worse it gets. And you'll see kids, you know, that they're autistic, you know, you can tell from their behaviors and from their, you know, the cues that they do that they most likely are an autistic kiddo. And you can just see them like really swiftly moving their way into a meltdown. And it's sad to see.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So let's get into some of the things that we found to be comfort items, I guess. There was one thing that I wanted to touch on, too, real quick, is the concept of stripping. A lot of autistic kids have that issue of stripping, especially at very inappropriate times. And as parents, you know, we're kind of like having to deal with, okay, please ignore the naked kid running around.
Yeah.
We're not savages. It literally is something that we cannot help, you know.
Your kid is a boy, you're better off, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. So, you know, like with Seth, we had the issues of him having the stripping thing going on. He'd get home from school and immediately strip down to his underwear. And
yeah, we don't even have the front door closed. And we're like, hold on, Seth, let's close the door. No one needs to see your underwear.
And it's unfortunate, you know, but again, you gotta do what you gotta do. As a parent, you know, you have to make the choice of, okay, I can either force him to wear clothes, or we're here in the privacy of our home. It's just going to happen. I'd rather him run around with underwear on than have him go into a constant meltdown situation because he can't stand the clothes being on.
Yes, exactly.
You know, you kind of have to take your battles and win them in the appropriate times, I guess, you know. And if you can keep your kids' clothes on while you're out in public, that's so much the better.
Yeah. But,
you know, so I just wanted to touch on that topic because I know that a lot of parents have to deal with exactly that. And it's an unfortunate one, too.
And it also doesn't mean that they'll stay that way forever. Like in Seth's case, he's not that way anymore. He will wear at least pants or shorts, at least that.
He really has. We can't get him to the point where he willingly wears a shirt unless he's going outside, and then he knows that he just has to do it.
Or but, unless he wants to look nice. Like every once in a while.
He wants to look fancy.
Yeah, every once in a while he wants to look fancy, so then he'll put on. And whenever he does that, he always wears like the opposite of what he should be wearing that year. So like, so right now we're just entering summer. We're getting like 70 degree days. And what is he doing? He's putting on a really heavy hoodie and long pants. And he's like, I'm ready for action. Oh, Seth, this is not this type of thing you'd be wearing.
You're so opposite on everything here, kiddo. Yeah. But, you know, at least he tries. And we kind of run with it as best as we can, you know. If it's too hot, no, you know, you're not walking out in 90 degree weather with two hoodies on and a pair of pants, you know,
just because you think you look cool. Yeah.
Just because you think you look fancy. So, you had a couple of items that you had on a list that you wanted to talk about as far as, like comfort items are concerned.
Yes. The first and foremost, this is one's kind of a common and more known about one, which is blankets, whether it be like the weighted blankets or even weighted clothes or not. Some kids do, you know, appreciate the weighted feeling. Others just plain being wrapped up in the clothes.
Yeah. See, now I've heard from a lot of parents that as far as those weighted autism blankets, the really special, you know, high priced ones that you can buy out there, that they're junk, they're worthless. I mean, I have not really encountered a parent yet that has actually had any kind of really good success with their kids using this thing.
I had a teacher in high school and she had three kids and they all had autism, and what she said worked. See, she taught like she taught like how to knit and crochet and that sort of thing. But
home economics.
Yeah, thank you. I'm a teacher and I can't think of that class. But anyway, so she also knows how to quilt. And so she had made like these special quilted blankets so that they had different patches of it, had like crinkles, and then another patch had you know, just something soft.
Different tactile sensations.
Exactly.
With it.
And then she also made another one that was her own version of weighted. I don't remember what she put in it, but she had her own version of like a weighted blanket. And they liked those, but then again, they were specially made in the, you know, she used fabrics that she knew the kids would like and so on and so forth. So
yeah, so she kind of custom tailored them to her own kids' specific needs, basically.
Exactly.
That's a good idea. I would say that any parent that's out there that has the time to do something like that, definitely
go for it.
Or the know-how. Yeah.
I would if I knew how to quilt, but
definitely go for it. And the blankets thing though too. Let me say something here. We've actually had kind of a running argument in the house at times, because like my mother lives with us. And she, whenever she would see Seth like cover up in a blanket, she like freaks out about it because she thinks that he's getting too hot underneath there. And it kind of turns into a running argument at times. For us, you know, we, the parents, we kind of let it go because we know that he's going to maybe spend a minute, maybe 2 minutes underneath it, and he'll come out from underneath it and he'll be much better. You know, his meltdown will have been coming into the subsiding part of it, basically. But when she would walk in and take the blanket away because she was worried about him getting too hot underneath it, that just continued the meltdown even further and blows it up like even more. So as my token of advice, basically, I would say that if your child is finding comfort in wrapping up in a blanket, just go ahead and let them do it. You know, make sure that they're safe.
Yeah, keep an eye on them just to make sure they don't accidentally wrap themselves too tight. I mean, in that moment, it's hard to tell what can happen.
Right. Make sure that they're safe, but, you know, don't flip out if they're looking like they're going to get too warm or anything like that, because it doesn't last long.
No.
They use this blanket basically as a way to cut off some of those sensations. When they're underneath the blanket, they're not getting in any kind of vision, and the sound levels are reduced drastically. So just those two things alone, you know, are very much improved. And I think that there's something to the idea of it's kind of a continuation of a lot of babies who love to be swaddled, you know, wrapped up mm-hmm. really tight in blankets because they're used to that feeling of being in the womb. And I think that actually it's kind of a throwback to that time period of being in the womb when they are wrapped up in the blankets like that. They're swaddling themselves essentially as a way to comfort themselves.
Exactly. And they usually go towards like a favorite blanket too. Like when Seth was younger, he always went towards this, tie-dye colored blanket that was his, and he just loved that thing. And pretty much any time he had it, he pretty much cuddled himself up into it. He's not into that blanket now. Nowadays, if he does it, it's usually just whatever blanket happens to be on his bed. So blanket or sheet, you know.
Right, exactly. So what was the next thing that you had on your list?
Kind of went into this already, but tactilely comfortable items. Or, you know, where you can make a patch or a board that has the different tactile senses on it, you know, so that they can go up and touch whenever they want. That can be real comforting, too. Being able to touch the different senses. And
I think that the reason why that works the way that it does is because they have a little bit of control over the feeling that they're going to be feeling,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to it just being a random thing that's coming into them. They're actually choosing to feel this feeling, and they can kind of concentrate on it more than anything else, basically.
Yeah. I mean, like, for example, Seth's pretty much, from what I can gather, Seth's favorite texture is like something that's furry or fluffy, you know, the really poofy kind of a texture.
Yeah, kind of like the troll heads.
Yeah, like that. Because I mean, his favorite toy that he's ever had was his bear Pookie, which was, well, it used to be very troll head like fur all over. It's been matted down over time, but it's still like that. And then his hoodie that he likes a lot, it's a Gap hoodie. It's one of those really furry, I guess you could say.
Yeah, it's very soft and kind of fuzzy feeling.
Yeah, he's always gone towards like the softer kind of feelings. He's never really cared for like velvet and he's not really
silkiness, not smooth kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, he's not really into that. I don't think he really cares about like sandpaper textures or anything. He's just kind of whatever with those, but he's always gone towards the softer, which I know with some kids, it's not that way. Some
right.
kids, they hate that feeling.
And yeah, it's going to be random, various, depending on your own kid. But yeah, that's a good idea to do. Maybe set up a little, you know, thing on their wall or on the floor or something like that.
That has like a strip of everything.
And sit, mm-hmm. you know, for instance, and, you know, just have different textures on it that you know that they like to feel. And maybe when they are seeking out that kind of comfort time, they can go to that.
Or maybe even if they don't, if they don't like it, you could just still give it to them as like a way to quote unquote explore the different textures, and it might even help them to be more comfortable around those textures too.
Precisely. Yep. That's a great idea. So what do you have next?
Special items, like intimate items, like for example with Seth, his teddy bear.
Oh, Pookie.
Pookie, yes.
Pookie and him go way back.
And before Pookie, it was Blue Man.
Was Blue Man, yes. It was a little Grover doll that I had given him when he was a baby. And he had that for the first about 5 years of his life.
And then he got
ever
Pookie.
Since then, he's had Pookie. And Pookie and him have had many adventures together, to say the least.
Pookie has taken over. If you look at the image to Adventures in Autism, he's holding Pookie.
Yes, actually, the little kind of bluish purple bear that's there. Yeah,
I will
lavender
say
color.
Though, he's been getting detached from Pookie. I think he's starting to step away from needing Pookie by his side all the time, because he made a bed for Pookie, and I knitted a pillow. Well, I didn't knit the pillow, but I made a pillow, and then I knitted a blanket for Pookie. And he has a little bed, and his bed is underneath his bed, and he hasn't really messed with him much. I mean, he used to be a thing of he'd wake up every morning, and Pookie would be in his chair with him. Usually he'd sit on Pookie for whatever weird reason, but Pookie would always be with him. And then almost any time we went out, he would bring Pookie, and then he might leave him in the car when we get to whatever our designation in is. Sometimes he'd bring him in, you know, whether it's going out to eat or to the library.
Yeah, Pookie would sit in a chair with us.
Exactly. Pookie had to have his own chair, but he can share the chair with purses and coats and whatnot, but he had to have his own chair. And, but he hasn't done that lately. He's been leaving Pookie inside lately, so, and he's been pretty much leaving Pookie under his bed. So I wonder if he's starting to kind of...
sort of outgrow him and distance himself away from Pookie. Maybe they had a fight.
Yeah, they might have had a fight.
They might have had an argument.
It's hard to tell, but I mean, it's nothing of our doing. I mean, we've never tried to get him to break away from it.
And that's kind of the point, you know, with a lot of these things as far as the comfort items are concerned. A lot of them may be from back in the past, and a lot of parents sort of, you know, freak out when they still have their blankets or their little whoobies or whatever, you know, that they have clung to. And I think in the case of, you know, quote unquote normal children, them moving away from them sort of maybe forcefully is maybe not necessarily a bad idea. But when it comes to one that is autistic, that need for the comfort, that need for that familiarity is so important for them that I think that there's a very reasonable argument to be made to not worry about it, basically.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about a 14-year-old son here that he's just now not bringing around a teddy bear with him all the time.
So. Exactly.
Which, I mean, he may, you know, turn around and go, oh, yeah, I forgot about Pookie. You know, there may be that day that he's like, I forgot all about Pookie. And then for, like, the next month, he'll be taking him around everywhere. I forgot to take Pookie.
Yeah, exactly. Well, listen, we're going to take a quick break here. And when we come back, we're going to get more into the comfort items as well as some comfort foods, too. So stick around with us. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
The L&M Radio Network and Late Night in the Midlands depends on you, the listener. Without you, there would be no us. So help us continue to bring you the best guests with the best information and subscribe today. Information on becoming an L&M subscriber can be found at the top of latenightinthemidlands.com. Just click the About Subscriptions tab and become part of the family while helping the truth stay alive. And while you're at it, maybe subscriptions aren't for you. A one-time donation helps as well. Click that donate button on the right side of latenightinthemidlands.com and help us help you.
Ben Franklin said, if you do the same thing tomorrow as you did today, you're going to get the same tomorrow as you got today. Changing the world starts with you, and changing you starts with changing the way you think. Late Night in the Midlands can help. Listen to all of our shows at latenightinthemidlands.com, because things really do need to change.
Transmission.
So I'll admit it, I'm a geek. I love anything science fiction or fantasy. I love to collect things that are related to the things that I like. There's a place that I go to find unique things. It's an Etsy shop that's called The Geeky Stitcher. They have some amazing and one-of-a-kind handcrafted collectibles on a lot of my favorite science fiction and fantasy-related shows and movies. You know, geek stuff. They have things like gloves that look just like the TARDIS from Doctor Who. They have crocheted figures from Star Trek, Disney movies, even Navi from The Legend of Zelda. They're all made with love, and they have a unique style, and best of all, they're cheaply priced. They'll even do custom orders. All you have to do is let them know what you would like to see made, and they'll get right on it. Check them out today at thegeekystitcher.etsy.com, or you can also go to their Facebook fan page, which is found at The Geeky Stitcher. Go there today. I'm sure you guys will find something that you would really, really love. Fear. There is always so much to fear. So many shadows are just waiting for the moment for when we pay no attention at all. Just waiting for the moment when they can grab us and make us come undone. Fear takes, and fear gives nothing in return. But there is one gift in this life that fear is afraid of. The gift of love. Reach out for someone today. Fear nothing, for fear is nothing. Live hard. Well, hello there, and welcome back to Adventures in Autism. My name is Ira Robinson.
And I am Jolene Robinson.
And I hope that you guys like that music there. It's kind of nice and quiet and soothing there.
Yeah.
It's good for this show, I think. We need a little bit more quiet and soothing. So before we took the break there, we were talking about some comfort items. And Jolene had brought a list into the show here that she had made of some different things that she thought of as far as the comfort items are concerned. She had one more on the list to go through before we get into the comfort foods and some of the other things that are associated with all of this. So why don't you go ahead and lead us into that?
Yeah, actually I have two more. I just thought of one that I forgot to make mention. The one that I forgot to make mention is music.
Ah, yes.
Music can definitely be, you know, the right kind, you know, obviously.
Yeah, you don't want to play any kind of like heavy metal, you know, kill your grandma death rap kind of stuff as far as an autistic kid is concerned. But, you know, stuff like that song, for instance, or you know, soothing sounds.
Classical
music is a big one. It really is.
Possibly pop.
Some pop, I think, is good. Yeah.
Seth's into pop and a lot of something that he's appreciated now. I have like he's got a collection of music that he can listen to. It's all Minecraft themed, is what it is. It's Minecraft parodies of original songs kind of thing that you can find on YouTube. And he's got a list of songs that are approved. And some have videos, some don't. And he'll go back there in his room, he'll close his door, and he just starts dancing. He does that almost every day, really.
Yeah, that's one thing with him is that he loves to dance, and that gets his energy out. That gets his different aggressions out.
We just got to keep track because sometimes he likes to put on his hoodie and then pants and then starts prancing and then he starts sweating and then he's like, "Mommy, I'm so thirsty. I just can't get enough to drink." Yeah, because you're dehydrating yourself.
Gee, I wonder why, Seth. Yeah.
He's gotten better. Don't worry.
Yeah. And yeah, the music is definitely a big one, I think. It's a very large contributory factor into what can, you know, help out in the end.
There's that one song. What was that one song that he just really, really enjoyed? The Where Are We?
Oh, Imogen Heap.
Yes.
Hide and Seek.
And Seek. Look up that song. When we played that song for him the first time, he just... He got hypnotized almost. I mean,
yeah, he
just
was
loved that song. And I mean, he begged for us to play it on repeat. So we played it on repeat, and about like the fifth time he was singing along with it kind of thing. And this was like quite a few years ago kind of thing.
Yeah, it was when it first came out.
He's not into it so much now, but that kind of introduced him to music. Up until then, he didn't really, you know, music was just kind of whatever, you know.
Yeah, he kind of blew it off up until then. Music can make a big difference. I mean, it does for us, you know, as normal people, you know, quote unquote, it does for us. I mean, music really does set a mood. So why would it not them as well? They who are very sensitive to moods and to, you know, the capricious moments, basically, it would have even more of an impact. It's just how it is.
Oh,
so
yes.
Yeah, most definitely. That's a good one. To have in there.
And then the other item that I did have written down was showers and bathing. It's not really an item you can give them, but it is a necessary item. Showers and bathing is very comforting. It can be. I guess there's probably some out there that it's not, but from most that I can tell, it's a very comforting thing. It was always for Seth. If Seth ever had... This will be brought up again in the aggression section, but whenever Seth had a tantrum, if I could get him to take a bath or a shower, he immediately would calm down once the water's on him.
Right, exactly. He would really respond well to water in any form, really. I mean, one of the things that
sprinklers.
He loves to do is go out and run around in the sprinklers. So, you know, there's something with water. I don't know what it is, but, well, I have some ideas. But water, it seems to be very balancing. And so, you know, if you can, for one example, I know that a lot of parents out there that have autistic kids, what they will do when they're having, you know, moments is they will get like a cool wash rag, you know, put cool water on a wash rag and just kind of massage the back of their neck with it. And it's a distraction away from whatever's going on, you know, mentally at that moment, causing the meltdown, it can kind of break that meltdown. It's throwing a monkey wrench into the mix, basically, you know, and it can stave it off, really. So, yeah, if you can get your child to do something bath wise or shower wise, you know, one thing that, I think helps is to use, certain scents in there. Very, very lightly, of course, but, you know, certain scents can also really change things as far as mood is concerned. Now, one thing that I want to throw into this mix as well is the idea of colors.
Mm-hmm.
We have found through scientific experimentation that different colors can actually cause different moods to occur in a person. And so if you're surrounding your child with certain colors, it could be actually contributing to problems that they're having. So for instance, one color that is always very soothing to the human mind is the color blue, especially lighter blues.
Which happens to be Seth's favorite color.
Yeah, the color blue is a very soothing type of thing, whereas the color red is actually more of an aggressive type of thing. So if you take a look around the room that your child spends the most time in, and you see that there are a prevalence of perhaps red colors, and you notice that they have a lot of aggression going on in that room, it very well could be because of the color scheme that you have going on in that room.
Or so even if they have too many colors going on.
Yeah, too many different colors. Exactly. Exactly. All of these different things can really contribute. You know, let me put it to you this way. When I've gone through being the father of three kids, you know, every time that one of my kids was born, I would immediately start going through the house, crawling around on my hands and knees, because I knew that that's basically the height at which a new child, you know, just learning how to walk and all that kind of stuff and crawl around, that's as high as they would be able to reach, essentially. So I would go through the house going, you know, place to place, seeing what all I could reach from that level, knowing that this would be the same thing that my kid could reach as well. So, it might take something like that. Get into the mindset of your child as much as you possibly can, and try to think as much like them as you possibly can, so that you can look around with their eyes, with their ears, with their senses, and see what might be contributing to issues that you're having there in your household.
Mm-hmm.
That's just my, you know, secondary take on things there.
Yep, I definitely agree. I mean, for example, Seth's room, the walls, ceiling, and floor are all white. Yes, we have white carpet. It's kind of off-white. But yeah, so everything is white, and then he has blue curtains. And then his door is even white. So the only other color that's in his room is the different pieces of furniture in his room. But his cabinets and his shelving in his room, they're all white. So, I mean, it's all the only drastic different color is his desk and his chair is black. But that's what he wanted. So,
right, exactly. So, you know, like I said, it might be worth doing to go into this yourself and see if maybe something along those lines might be contributing to some aggression factors that you have going on in the house there. I know I was kind of touching into aggression there, but
it ties together.
Yeah. So you had some ideas as far as comfort foods were concerned. Why don't we go ahead and touch on a couple of those?
Yeah, there's not a whole lot, because I mean, it's per kid, per basis kind of thing. I mean, anything can really be a comfort food. I mean, anything. For Seth, I would say it'd be chips or crackers, especially chips. Him and Cheez-Its have gone forever. Him and Cheez-Its are like the best buds.
Yes, most definitely.
Oh, yeah. He's got to have, we have to have like 3 boxes of Cheez-Its in the house. This is how he works. He has to have 3 boxes of Cheez-Its in the house, or else he kind of freaks out. He needs to have at least 3. If he's down to 2, he immediately tells me, Mommy, I'm only down to 2. I need one more box of Cheez-Its. Now, yes, well, sometimes he eats a little bit from all 3, which then they start to spoil. But he still eats them. I don't know. But he eats them fairly quickly, so they don't really go that bad.
Yeah, they don't have a chance.
Yeah, but, I mean, him and Cheez-Its, he's got to have Cheez-Its. And for him, it's a comforting excuse me, it's a comforting thing to know that he does have a supply of Cheez-Its if he, you know.
He has a stock.
He has a stock, yeah. And there's times, like, of late, he's kind of slowed down, but he's still like, Mommy, there's only two boxes up there. I need another one. Well, you're slowing down on eating. Mommy, I need a third box. Okay, I'll get you another box. So, yeah. So, anything can really be a comforting food. It's you just got to see what, you know, what do they tend to go for the most? What do they tend to ask for the most? What do they, is there anything that they say only, we only have one box left of? If they say something like that, then that's probably their comforting food.
If he could get away with it, he would live on Cheez-Its, spaghetti, pizza, and burritos. That literally is like his stock in trade as far as comfort foods are concerned. You know, and
root beer.
And root beer, yeah. So, I mean, the thing is, when it comes to comfort foods, you know, just find whatever it is that is their kind of go-to items and just, you know, work with them as best as you can. Of course, you want to have some variations because they to get their nutrition. But, you know, if you have to supplement some vitamins or something like that, you know.
Do that. And
gummy vitamins, you know, there's nothing wrong with those things.
And don't be upset if their comfort food is not a healthy snack or anything. I mean, it's a comfort food for a reason. Don't down them. Don't make them feel bad. Oh, no, your comfortable food is French fries. You got to have French fries with every meal. Well, sometimes you got to make that sacrifice.
Sometimes you have to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
It you know, and a lot of people, when they talk about these kind of things, I've heard other parents out there that don't have autistic kids say, well, you're just spoiling your kids. You're just, you know, playing into what they want and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, look, I mean, they're not a normal child. Okay. They have different needs to accommodate them. So it's a matter again of choosing your own battles, choose your battles wisely, basically. So, that's good as far as I think, comfort foods are concerned. Before we end the show tonight, I definitely wanted to get into the topic of aggression because this all relates, you know, when they're not feeling comfortable, that's when you have incidents of aggression and aggressive behaviors. So, I know that you had a couple of things that you had, written up as far as this topic was concerned. Why don't you go ahead and get us started on it?
Okay. So the top thing is, if they're having a moment of aggression, remove them from all sensory input if you can. Now, obviously, this is if they're like super hyper aggressive. If they're just slightly aggressive, you don't need to remove them from everything. But if they're severely, then try to remove them from everything. Now, obviously, if they're really young, that's easier because you can just pick them up and move them. But if they're older, you know, like a 14-year-old, that's not very easy to do. So you got to try and work with them to, you know, turn off the TV or at least mute it and then turn off the TV and do this and then that and then this and then that. Just kind of help to remove them. Or if anything else, you can just say, hey, let's go outside, you know, just, you know, get away from that room that everything is happening in. Or, hey, let's go do sprinkler, you know, even though they're having a tantrum of whatever sort, you know, do whatever you can to remove them from that situation. Another one that ties into this is to bathe them. I already said this before, but bathing. So if they're having a tantrum, if they're not feeling good, you can just say, hey, how about let's go take a bath and we'll cool down and we'll be better after that. As we said before, that worked a lot with Seth. When they were going to regular school, Seth would come home and he would almost always be upset. You know, he's been at school for 8 hours with a bunch of noisy kids and most of them don't pay attention to the teacher. And he's always telling on the teacher about, hey, he's not doing what he's supposed to. So by the time he gets home, he's just frustrated. Plus there's homework. So a ritual we had was as soon as they came home from school, we pretty much did bath time. So, I mean, it all kind of relates.
Yeah, it's a thing of resetting. That's mainly why they go into the aggression and why they go into the meltdowns to begin with, is because they've got so much input that's going on that they have to do a reset. You know, the brain short circuits at that point, and they have to do a reset of the hardware, basically. And then once they've gone through this aggression and once they've gone through the meltdown, at that point, then you can start dealing with the other issues that are happening. But the main point is to do what you can to stop that aggression, you know, as it occurs, basically. You want to be, you know, you want to make sure that they're safe. That's the most important thing of all. You want to make sure that they're safe. They're not harming themselves. Unfortunately, I know that with a lot of autistic kids out there, they do go into the self-harm stuff. And
I'll get into that in a minute.
Okay, so why don't you go ahead then?
Okay, well, before I get to that one, I was going to say, too, you let them cover up with a blanket. We already touched on this one. That's why I just wanted to point it out real fast. To let them cover up in a blanket if they feel the urge and whatnot. So as far as, like, harming, if they're being physically harmful, whether it's to themselves or others, first of all, if they're using an object, do every means you can to take it away.
Yeah, most definitely. That one is... the biggest.
Yeah. Do whatever means you can to take the item away. Yes, it will make it worse. It will make them react worse, but you don't need them to hurt themselves with whatever object it is. And then, if you need to, if need be, constrain them. It's a hard one to hear, but it's
yeah,
true.
Yeah, you have to restrain them from harm as much as is physically possible to do. I mean, you know, and I hate to say it, but even if you have to, you know, sit down with them on your lap and hold their arms down or whatever it takes to make sure that they are not causing themselves injury, that is the most important thing. And you know, it's hard to do. It's hard for a parent to do because, you know, I'm feeling like I'm hurting my child or whatever, but you know, you're not hurting them. You're protecting them. You're keeping them safe. So we've got about 1 minute left. What else did you?
Okay, I'll try and run through these really quickly.
Well, I mean, take your time because we can actually do another episode with this topic in mind as well, which I think we will do. So
because there's just so much. Okay, so let's see here. If the situation is out of everyone's control, for example, like the power goes out and whatnot, that can lead into a meltdown. If that happens, make a joke of it. This worked so beautifully with Seth. If something happens and it's out of everyone's control, or they think it's out of your control, make a joke out of it. Go, oh, the electricity's so silly, I can't believe it just went out. Oh, I bet you it's the storm. Oh, you silly storm, I can't believe you did that. If you do that enough, they will catch on to that and they will do it themselves. That happened with Seth. We joked all the time, you know, every time the TV would go out or the power would go out. Oh, the silly computer. Oh, the silly electricity. And it came to the point that at one point in time, our cable went out. We were purposefully switching, but we didn't tell him. And when it went out, we're like, oh, the silly cable, what is it? What's it doing? And he started the whole thing. He's like, oh, that's so silly. And he laughed about the situation when normally he would have, you know, had a meltdown.
Yeah, would have completely freaked out. Exactly. And I think that's a really good one, too, because, you know, when it comes to everything that goes on with our children, no matter if they're, you know, the average child or if they're an autistic child, they pick up on what you're feeling. And if you are doing what you can do to not feel panicky or afraid or, you know, like things are wrong, then they're not going to pick up on that, you know? So, I mean, do what you can to relax yourself as much as possible, because we as parents, we have just as much of a contributory factor of what's happening to them as anything else does. And in fact, probably even more.
Oh yes. Learn to understand your child. If it's a child, you know, learn to understand the person and don't so much look to them as this person is so disabled, I can't relate. No, relate yourself to that child.
Yes, get into their mindset as much as you possibly can. So if you guys want to go to the show notes for this show, you guys can go to openeyesnetwork.com/AA004. If you want to send us an email, you can send it to feedback@openeyesnetwork.com. And if you want to go to our Facebook or Twitter pages, those are both at Open Eyes Network or Ira Robinson on both of those platforms. So guys, until next time, thank you so much for tuning in and thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate all of the feedback that we've been getting about this show. So thank you. And until next time, keep safe out there and have fun.
Thank you again.